It is astonishing, as I've said so many times, that so many people are misled by religion, that so many people are willing to mislead others in the name of their religion. You know, whether it's a Muslim training a son or daughter to be a jihadist, or one jihadist recruiting another, whether it's a Christian like Rich Warren deceiving his parishioners who are paying his salary to mislead them, whether it's the Pope who gets the fancy outfit and the fancy hat and the fancy title, none of which I would want. In fact, I despise them all. And speaks as if he's an authority, as if he's speaking for God, when in fact everyone who listens to him, everyone who believes him, is estranged from God. But when it's so obvious that those who brought us the world's two most popular religions were complete and total frauds, absolute nincompoops, repulsive people, avowed liars, demon-possessed by their own admission, vicious, perverted, again, by their own personal disclosures, that when the founders of the world's two largest religions were sexual perverts, murderers, avowed liars, and acknowledged being demon-possessed, providing rhetoric which is moronic, that has on its face absolutely zero chance of being true, that's internally contradictory, that's inconsistent with history, with science, and it doesn't offer even a glimmer of reason to believe it based upon future prophecies, because there are none in either's writing, Paul's or Muhammad's, that came true as they profess. Not one from either of them. That religions established by these men to have endured, to have grown, it's just mind-boggling, folks. Absolutely ludicrous. Now, with Muhammad, I mean, it is just as clear as the nose on your face. All you have to do is read the Quran, read the Hadith, and you'll know. Anyone who reads these who is rational and open-minded, is going to not only reject the religion, they're going to hate the religion. They're going to vehemently oppose the religion because they know it's a malignant cancer, this terrible scar on humankind. It's deadly, destructive. And they'll oppose those things which morally, on a moral basis, that are deadly and destructive. Now, it's a little harder with Christianity, because Paul's letters, while they're vicious towards Yahweh, towards Yahusha, towards Yahusha's disciples, and towards all Jews, while they're absolutely vicious towards even the people that Paul preached to, calls them idiots, because they didn't believe him, actually. It was a smart thing to do. So while they're twisted and dark, contradictory and deceitful, destructive and damning, with exception of periods of time where Christianity and politics were enjoined, as they were in the Roman Catholic Church and its total control of the empire that was once Rome, where they were engaged in all sorts of deadly behaviors, mass murder, torturous behaviors, that for the most part today, Christians are among the least destructive and least deadly religious practitioners on the planet. So there's no reason to oppose Christianity on the basis of today's Christians, other than to warn people that that if they choose Christianity, if they believe Christianity, if they put their faith in Christianity, that they will be disappointed, that their soul will cease to exist, that they will die. And that by doing so to their children, they're showing an absolute disregard for the lives of their children. But that doesn't change the reality that, nonetheless, that Christianity is obviously untrue. Now, it's not as blatantly untrue as Islam. And that's like the nose on your face. I mean, you'd really have to be an idiot not to recognize that Islam is a complete fraud. But with Christianity, it takes some doing. Well, first of all, you'd have to read the Pauline letters, which form the basis of the Christian New Testament and the basis of the Christian religion. Because you can't get a religion, you can't get a church, you can't get a faith, you can't get anything new out of Yosha. Of course, the Christians don't even know his name. But he didn't proclaim anything new, didn't introduce anything new, didn't create a church, didn't create a religion. And there is no Christian doctrine that can come from him. So all of Christianity is based on Paul. And if you don't recognize that, then I would just say you're not rational. Are you that or you're not informed? Yosha's rhetoric was wholly opposed to what has become the religion of Christianity. He was more observant. So, as we deal with Christianity, we have to recognize that if you're to read Paul's letters, the first thing you'll find is that he makes some extraordinary claims about how he received his revelation, which if you then check the history of Paul's life as presented in the book of Acts by Luke, are wholly inconsistent. In one place he says this is what happened to him, another place he says that is what happened to him, and they're not the same, not even remotely the same. And so you read the two accounts, the one by and presented historically by Luke, who traveled with Paul extensively, and the other in Paul's letter to the Galatians, which was his first letter, you find that there are extraordinary inconsistencies and incompatibilities with his own account of his own past. And then what you have is zero credibility with his conversion experience. It's the very kind of experience that Yosha said, if somebody claims this, don't believe them. And yet, this person claims that they're authorized and exclusively authorized to speak for the same God that says if somebody makes this claim, don't believe them. Now, that's not hard to figure out if you're open-minded and informed and rational, that you ought not trust such an individual. And, you know, he describes that experience horrifically. That he was so badly beaten and blinded that it took days for him to recover. The God that I know enlightens. He does not blind. The God that I know enables his children to walk. He does not strike lame. The God that I know empowers. He does not beat people to a pulp. Now, on top of all that, this man, as he's writing his history and getting it convoluted and twisted because he wants to create impressions that are not true, and he just gets himself all tangled. But if you were open-minded as a Christian and you read what Paul said in Galatians and you compare that to the history in Acts, you would know that he is lying about the events that took place at the Jerusalem summit. And you will also know for absolute certain that he went to war against the disciples, that he sought to discredit them, to demean them, to attack them, to condemn them, and if he could, castrate them. It's obvious. And it's no way to say that, Paul's right. How could Paul be right? Because if Paul's right, Yosha is wrong in having chosen the 12, having educated the 12, having communicated through the 12 to us. If Paul's right, Yosha is wrong. If Yosha is wrong, Paul can't be right. It's a lose-lose. Simple. Paul then claims to speak for him, and yet he never quotes him. That doesn't work, folks. Paul then says he was appointed by the God, but it's the God that he claims appointed him. He contradicts in every possible way, besmirches his reputation, calls him impotent, says he can't save, demeans his testimony. It's not possible. It's irrational. So either you're wholly unaware of that, or you're just not able to process it, Christian. And there are so many issues just beyond Paul's rhetoric, which was so badly communicated, so faulty from a rational and logical point of view. Or the very fact that claiming to speak for God, he not only contradicts what God says, but then goes on this whole diatribe of, but then I, Paul, say. Why don't you read the Torah and the prophets? And why don't you find a place where Moshe or Yahshua, Isaiah, or David, Dode, or Yirmiyah, Jeremiah, or Hosea, or Malachi, where one of them says, attempts to quote God, Yahweh, misquotes him, twists the saying of God out of context to suggest the antithesis of what God was communicating, and then continues with, but then I, Moses, but then I, Isaiah, but then I, David, but then I, Jeremiah, said. If you can find him doing that, I'll apologize. But if you can't, you may want to reject, but I, Paul, say. If we continue with Paul's letter to the Galatians, we were in the second chapter of that letter. And Paul is speaking out against the disciples. And he says, but from those currently reputed and supposed to be somewhat important, based upon some sort of past, they were nothing to me. Folks, the only individuals that were being besmirched here by Paul, that were called reputed to be somewhat important based upon some unspecified past, are Yosha's disciples. Shimon Kefesh in particular, who Paul in this letter will then go on and condemn. Yohanan, who Paul opposed vehemently in Ephesus. And of Jacob, who Paul also condemns and demeans by name. There's so many things here that you just need to put together the pieces. Like when Yosha spoke of the wolf in sheep's clothing that would lead people away from the Torah. There's only one individual that fits that. Paul. When Yahweh condemns Shaul by name and speaks of when he was going to arrive and who he would be speaking to and talks about his aversion to circumcision and states that he's the plague of death. There's only one individual in all of human history that meets that criterion. Paul, the author of half the Christian New Testament. When Yosha in Revelation speaks of the false apostle who would mislead so many in Ephesus, the only individual in all of human history that meets that criterion is Paul. When Yosha said, I have come in my Father's name and you do not receive me, but one will come in his own name and him you will receive. the list of candidates that fit that is singular. Paul. When Yahushua warned his disciples and us through them that if someone claims to have seen him in the wilderness before the entire world sees him as glowing as a constellation of stars returning to earth for the beginning of the millennial Shabbat for 1,000 years, that they're lying. Don't follow them. Now, the individual is singular for every one of those warnings. Paul. And here, there is zero chance, folks. There it cannot make a rational case for anyone for Paul to have been besmirching, to be called supposed and reputed, to be important because of some past than the disciples. And the past they were he's speaking of is the 3 years that they spent with Yahushua when he never met him. And their importance is that they were specifically chosen by Yahushua, and yet he is dismissing that. And the idea that this individual was therefore conveying the message of Yahushua is preposterous under this basis. With this book included in your Christian New Testament, and with this line written therein, if you are informed and rational, you have to reject the religion. Or you're going to remain ignorant, irrational, deceived, damned, which means separated from God, and thus walking towards your own demise and death. The stakes are high, at least for you. He wrote, it carries through the face of God, of man, not to take hold of. Now, I have no idea what that means. I can just tell you what the Greek words that are written on Papyrus 46, which was committed to paper within 25 years, maybe 50 years of Paul's death. It's the closest that we have, I think, of any parchment. From the time that we know that the corpus was written to the time that we have a manuscript that is contains them. And it's comprehensive. Parchment 46 has got all of Paul's life. And it's a late first, early second manuscript. And Paul wrote this first letter around 52 CE. The last letter maybe 8 to 10 years thereafter. So we're talking about a very short period of time, and this is what it says. It carries through the face of the God, of man, not take hold of. Does that sound like inspired word? I don't think there's a chance in hell that God inspired someone to write, it carries through the face of the God, of man, not to take hold of. Now, that's just gibberish. The God who conceived DNA, who wrote the Torah, who inspired the prophets, is smarter than that. If your God's not smarter than this gibberish, then I suggest you find a better God. And I know for certain that there is no place where you find Yahweh's prophets condemning the prophets who came before them, just as Paul has trying to condemn those Yahushua sent before him. So you've got an 0 for 2 here. A, God never inspires someone to demean and discredit someone that he's previously inspired. Ever. But yet that's what Paul's doing. And number 2, God doesn't inspire gibberish. His Torah is brilliantly written, as are his prophets. Then he says, because to me, the ones currently presuming and supposing, no account was their advice and counsel. To me, I don't give a crap. You shouldn't give a crap of what Paul thinks. I give a hoot what God thinks. You should say, you know, if he had written to God, their testimony was of no account. And if, in fact, they were promoting something that was inconsistent with God, and if Paul was promoting that which was consistent with Yahweh, then it would be a credible statement that the opposite is true. The disciples were communicating that which was consistent with Yahusha, and Yahusha only communicated that which was consistent with Yahweh. And Paul, uniformly, without exception, communicates that which is inconsistent with Yahusha and inconsistent with Yahweh. Moreover, this is, but I, Paul. To me, Paul. Why to him, Paul? Because Paul is in opposition with Yahweh. Because the source of his inspirations, Satan, is the adversary of Yahweh. He's in opposition to the disciples because he wants to claim the world on behalf of his wannabe God and on behalf of himself. So he cannot be an apostle in the same sense that Yahusha's disciples were apostles, which is really nothing but a transliteration of the Greek apo, to be sent out, and agelos, which is to serve as a messenger. So here we have Paul serving as a messenger for Satan in direct opposition to Yahusha and to Yahweh. Now, folks, there's something really, really twisted about that. If you can't figure it out, then you're way to be dumb, way too dumb to be operating an appliance in your kitchen, much less driving a vehicle, much less putting your faith in a religion. Because to me, the ones currently presuming and supposing are no account was their advice and their counsel. So when they spoke in favor of circumcision, when they spoke in favor of the covenant, when they spoke in favor of the Torah, when they spoke in favor of Yahweh, when they spoke in favor of Yahusha, Paul, that was of no account, because what Paul wanted to speak of and what Paul writes of is, but I, Paul, say. Now, so much of this is awkward and disjointed, and the combination of the odd selection of verbs, the missing prepositions, the inappropriate grammatical forms, and the overall lack of sufficient information renders the result an enigma. But in the context of a meeting with the called out in Jerusalem, besides Yahusha's disciples, and specifically Shimon, Yaakov, and Jacob, who else would have been in attendance who might have been reputed and supposed to be somewhat important based upon something that occurred in the past? No one else could have been held to be especially important. So then to say that these men were actually worthless to Paul is gut-wrenching. And since the disciples are the only potential candidates for Paul's demeaning dismissal, why didn't this weasel have the courage to name them while he is rebuking them? And the fact is, he will name them three sentences hence. But only because he claims that Shimon, Yaakov, and Jacob granted him the right hand of honor and authority. Something they did not do. But I must ask, why does Sheol's opinion matter? Why attend a meeting if the counsel of those at the meeting is considered meaningless? Why did Paul respond by undermining the credibility of those who were challenging him rather than debating them? Typically, those who counter challenges in this manner do so, it's called an ad hominem attack, because they cannot prevail on the merits of their argument. Paul is engaged in ad hominem, attacking the messenger rather than the message. This tactic is used universally when the attacker is aware that they have no chance whatsoever of winning the argument on the merits of the evidence. Now, if you're rational, if you're logical, you'll reject Christianity on that ground alone. So in the first sentence, it's what's not said that renders the result somewhere between senseless and salacious. But with the second statement, we have to question whether Paul was even lucid. This diaphero speaks of carrying different things, typically a burden in various ways. So how does one apply this activity to the face of God or to the context of this discussion? Why wasn't a preposition added before the face? Why was anthropou, man, scribed in the genitive, making it of man? Furthermore, how does any of this relate to lambano, taking, obtaining, acquiring, or receiving? If Paul was intending to say that there were no discussions in the presence of God which a man can receive, then that is what he should have written, but he didn't. I suspect that is because he himself claimed to be different and distinct, to hold a status that no one else had ever acquired, the lone chosen and appointed apostle to the Gentiles, and thus to 99.9% of the world. Therefore, if the words are accurately translated, the statement is senseless. But if we try to make sense of them through copious copy edits, Paul's entire mantra is contradicted. As a result, all we know for sure is that Paul writes poorly. Additionally, he held Yosha's disciples in extremely low esteem, and he felt that it was easier to demean them than it would have been to debate them. Overall, this is an interesting comment for Shaul to make, considering his penchant for offering unsubstantiated opinions if they were snowflakes in the Arctic. To him, it is as if these 3 years that the disciples spent listening to and observing Yosha's every word and deed didn't mean squat. Shaul, after all, had been a rabbi. He had been to rabbinic school, and they were manual laborers. So I suppose that this is not unlike the disdain clerics have for laity today. This is the second time over the course of 5 statements that we have confirmed that this Greek word dokiai, were of the opinion, is properly rendered. And in this context, it's dokia's subjective side which unequivocally prevails. According to Paul, these men purported to be important. They were considered by themselves and others to be authorities. They were wannabes in Paul's opinion, and yet they were irrefutably called by God, irrefutably, publicly appointed by as disciples by God himself, and led and instructed by God over the course of time, all within the purview of history. Now compare that to Shaul, who can't even name a single witness to corroborate his momentary misadventure on the road out of town. Compare the two. Just think about it. Just for a moment. Put those things together. And if you do, and you do not reject Christianity, then stop listening to this show, please. Go away. Just be miserable on your own. You haven't the capacity to think. I'm sorry for you, but I can't help you. God himself can't help you. If you're not able to realize just how preposterous Paul's position is in the context of who he's talking about and what he's saying, and you don't reject him for the outright lies that he's communicating, on that basis alone, then you're not rational. And if you're not rational, what good is evidence? What good is even God's testimony if you won't compare it and contrast it with Paul's and choose one of the other over the other? Besides the obvious, this passage should have been a warning to the Roman Catholic Church. Their patron saint has just said that his God, which by the way, is the Christian God, lowercase g, does not recognize human heresies. Those who claim rank in relationship to the Pauline God, such as popes, not only don't have such authority, they are operating in direct opposition to the founder of their faith. In actuality, however, some do have an elevated and special standing with God. We are his covenant's children. We are his heirs, inheriting everything he has to offer, from eternal life to perfection, from adoption to empowerment. So while it is akin to putting a pig in a pretty pink dress, I suppose it might have been good had Shaul affirmed that religious and political heresies have no standing with God. But that's not what he said. And we really ought to deal with what he said and consider what he meant, why he had to say it. Today, these men that Paul will name, and that he is besmirched here by their appointment and by their experience with Yoshim, Yaakonin, Shimon, Kephish, and Jacob. For you Christians, that would be James, Peter, and John. Had they not been Yoshim's disciples, unfortunately they were, for Paul, for you as a Christian, it would have been appropriate to identify the nature of the organization to which these men may have once belonged, to have listed the invalid positions that they or others may have articulated, and then to point out, using Yahweh's testimony, or even Yosha's testimony, since it affirmed Yahweh's testimony, what they said, how what they said differed from what God's testimony. So if they took, you know, if Paul were to say, look, there's no way to resolve this because he's talking about Yosha's disciples, and that's just a non-starter. I mean, it puts Paul's position in an obvious, he's lying, quadrant. But then you can't get it out of there. But had this not been the disciples, and had Paul either named the individuals and in addition named the human institution to which they were belonged, in which they were representing, and then stated their arguments, and then methodically dismissed their arguments based upon how they were in conflict with the Torah or prophets, then this would have been meaningful. It wouldn't be inspired, but it would have been useful. It would have been appropriate. But none of that is the case. And since none of that is the case, at the very best, what you have here, if you pull it out of context, is Paul is condemning individuals on an ad hominem argument, which is a waste of time. We learn absolutely nothing in the process other than Paul's belligerence and has a egotistical opinion of himself. That's the best case. The worst case is the obvious case, that he's in direct opposition to those that Yosha chose, taught, inspired, and authorized. And, of course, that's lose-lose. So while just three sentences from now, he will reveal the names of those he's impugning. In Luke's testimony and Acts, beyond the disciples themselves, the only others mentioned may have formally been associated with the Pharisees, but then again, so was Paul. And even then, we're left wondering what issues may have been raised. That they aren't presented, so we don't learn anything. Based upon what follows in this letter from Paul's perspective, the worthless wannabes were the disciples, that's obvious, specifically Shimon, Yaakonin, and Jacob. And their testimony was discounted because they encouraged others to observe the Torah. And that revelation is devastating to Paul's credibility, because speaking of those who had promoted Yahweh's Torah, he just said that they added nothing to the conversation. With Paul, it continues to be one step sideways and all others backwards. Since this allegation was utterly devastating to King James's claim to have divine authority to rule, which was the entire purpose behind the publication of the KJV. The passage was edited to say that God accepteth no man's person. I kid you not. That's what the King James says. But of these who seemed to be somewhat, in parentheses, whatsoever they were, it maketh no difference to me. God accepteth no man's person, end of parenthetical. For they who seemed to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. Can you imagine how difficult that must have been for Francis Bacon and the other Rosicrucians and elitists to torture Paul's Greek to the point where they made it? But of those who seem to be somewhat, whatsoever they were, it maketh no difference to me. God accepteth no man's person, for they who seem to be somewhat in conference added nothing to me. Can you imagine? And then when they were all done and they had convoluted this, and what you're left with may be as unintelligible as what Paul wrote. It's astonishing to me that there's one Christian on the planet, much less 2.5 billion of them. But then it's astonishing to me that there's one Muslim on the planet, much less 1.5 billion of them. I'm even surprised that there are agnostics, that there are secular humanists on the planet. And there are billions of them, too.